I give this talk again here, for especially towards high energy physicists. So so the talk is kind of a little bit the title like something strange, but so the purpose is try to make some connection between this high energy physics and the condensed matter physics. So people are now talking about Majorana zero modes, and actually they can be realized in many realistic system like this nano wire, and also like a topological superconductor. So the idea here is that if we assume these fundamental neutrinos, they are kind of Majorana zero modes, and there's some way to impose so-called fractionalized definition of a CPT symmetry. And this symmetry actually gave rise to the pretty interesting neutrino mass mixing matrix. And so far, we compare to all the experimental measurement, they agree pretty well. And we also make some predictions for the mass ratio and this CP violation angle. So let me just start. Okay, so first I will introduce what is called a Majorana zero mode. What's the difference between the usual Majorana particle people studying high energy physics? And then I could just show you there can be some fractionalized CPT symmetry for these Majorana zero modes. And then I will propose a possible origin of this three generation. And based on this picture, I can compute this mass mixing matrix. And now this matrix have some like very special interesting Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, and I can also show if I put some CP violation phase, the phase could be uniquely determined from these matrices. Okay, finally the summary. Okay, so we know for a long time this neutrino kind of like a ghost particle. It has extremely weak interactions with all other particles and almost vanishing rest mass, and actually billions of neutrinos in our room here, right? So then people studied this very interesting topic. Maybe I can call it a ghost hunting. So people try to measure this neutrino oscillation, I think, since about two or three decades ago. So the idea is that the neutrino mass eigenstate and the weak eigenstate, they are not coincide. So usually we use this weak eigenstate to define three generations of neutrinos. And because they are not coincide, and if the mass are different, they will oscillate after they created it. So there are some way to measure this mixing angle from this high energy experiment. So let me just brief summarize what's the current result we have. So basically, the neutrino mass mixing matrix in its most general form, I think I also major, I think, this mixing matrix 3x3 can be decomposed into three pieces, but actually in some papers, I think in general, there's also another like diagonal phase, another two diagonal phase if we assume it's Majorana particle. But the major part is just this three matrices.
What's the nature of this decomposition?
Oh, yeah. So the nature, I think it's a kind of 3x3 matrix, then you can decompose it into three rotation. But
the original one is a generic unitary transformation?
Yeah, it's just a 3x3 unitary transformation. But so in the real case, just a three rotation, but in general, there could be a flux. So you can imagine, you can put some like imaginary part here with proper gauge. And the current measurement for this, for this angle, I think people are already very conclusive, especially for this theta 2-3, almost 45 degree maximal oscillation, and theta 1-2 very close to 32 degree. And theta 1-3, in the absence of CP violation, kind of leading all the approximation, people believe it's zero. But last year, I think they came up with a new result. It's actually non-zero. It's a pretty form. It's like around 7.5 degree. So with all this kind of information, we have a pretty interesting perspective about this mixing matrix. It implied to have some pretty high symmetry in this mixing matrix. It's different from the quark-CKM mixing matrix. Okay, so converting into this numerical values, it's just some number like this. Historically, people try to understand this neutrino after this high energy standard model was developed. But of course, in standard model, we know the prediction is neutron have explicitly zero mass. So then after the discovery of neutron oscillation, people try to incorporate this neutron mass into this high standard model. So the famous idea is that use the so-called seesaw mechanism, because if you directly add some mass, let's say it's called a Majorana mass in the neutron sector, it will break this electric weak symmetry, so it's not allowed. So the standard way is just use the following mechanism. So it's actually just a kind of like a trick. So because this Majorana mass is zero, then we just put some Dirac mass between this left and right hand neutrino. And this right hand neutrino have a very big mass, so people usually call it a stirring neutrino. And this zero mass neutrino, we call it light neutrino. But in the presence of this Dirac mass, which may be induced by Higgs mechanism, then you can show there's two mass eigenstate. One is almost on the order of MD squared over M, and M2 is M. But there's a very interesting estimation if we assume that this light neutrino has the energy scale like 0.1 eV, and we put this MD squared kind of on order of electric weak energy scale like 100 GeV, then you find that this capital M, this dark neutrino or stirring neutrino, it's on the energy scale of this ground unification. So it's kind of a pretty amazing idea from this very simple observation of the 2x2 matrix trick. And now I think there are many evidence to support this stirring neutrino do exist in our universe, but just not easy to observe it. Sorry, what's the question? I think, because I'm not an energy high energy physicist, I'm just talking to some people, and they told me in the like high energy LHC collision, there could be some like mystery energy lost, and some people attribute that to very heavy neutrino.
People think and try to see it, but there's no observation.
Yeah, there's no direct observation so far. Yeah, that's the things I'm mentioning. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a question. But if the stirring neutrino does not carry any gauge charge, why it interacts with light neutron? Because there's no nature interactions. So that's a question one. And the question two is that why it is so massive, and where does mass come from? And do we have like a much more clear experiment proposal to determine whether they really exist or not? So today.
You just said where the mass come from, it comes from the gas.
Yeah, but you can still ask why at a gut scale needed this mass, right?
So then breaking into the record
up. Yeah, yeah.
This is the
yeah.
Origin of this idea.
Right. But
gut scale, you get the gut mass, and that's it.
Right. Then you can imagine maybe there's some something like additional Higgs boson might need, right, to give rise to this mass.
Yeah. So without understanding most of the details. Mm-hmm. I can see that when you put this metric for the mass overall, mm-hmm. that you are suggesting that there is a natural basis in which you have expressed this metric and a natural basis which they have analyzed this metric. There are two bases, right? When you write these metrics, it suddenly you have two.
You mean
natural
which
bases.
Matrix? You mean this matrix?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So there are two bases that are important in these metrics. One is the one that analyzes the metrics.
Yeah. So
and
the so the diagonal is the one people call this mass eigenstate. Yeah. So the experiment they measure this mass eigenstate.
So my question then is, what is the other basis, the one in which you wrote this metrics?
So this basis is just this left hand and right hand basis. So that they have different quantum numbers, well separated.
Okay. So there are different quantum. Well, there are some quantum numbers that.
Yeah. Left neutrino is SU2 doublets, and the right neutron is SU2 singlets.
Okay.
So it's different.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this talk, I still use this old scenario. I assume that this mass and the mass mixing actually for light neutrino is induced by this very massive heavy neutrino through this seesaw mechanism. So it's kind of in some sense, it's a standard framework in high energy physics. Okay, so let me go back to this very early days about this Majorana's elegant proposal for this real Dirac equations. So you can write down four gamma matrix, which is real, and you can also write on this Dirac equation. So neutrons are very promising candidate because it does not carry any charge. But why there are three generation, and why we measure those very kind of mystery mixing angles. So I try to understand this problem from this so-called topological perspective. So in this talk, I refer topological Magellan particle carry unusual CPT symmetry as a Magellan ghost. So to distinguish with this Magellan particle. So let me show you what's the topological perspectives and what's the definition of Magellan zero modes. So this is kind of concept related to the what's the definition of a time reversal symmetry of a Magellan particle. So usually we know that for a boson, we have T squared equal to minus one time reversal symmetry. And a fermion, of course, is half boson. So therefore, it has T squared equal to minus one time reversal symmetry. But can we say Magellan fermion, it's kind of like a half degree. It's just a half fermion, and it should carry T quartic equal to minus one symmetry. And usually, if you look at any high energy book, it just tells you, oh, they're just different representations. There's a Magellan representation, there's a wild representation. So yeah, nothing changed, nothing different. But in condensed matter, recent years, people can even realize something called Magellan zero modes in the lab. And if we carefully study this time reversal for these Magellan zero modes, we find they're pretty interesting. They can carry this so-called T-quartic equal to minus one symmetry. And this symmetry also, it's kind of a projective representation of this time reversal. And the dimension is two-dimensional. So if you look at a local fork space, it's like an evolved a particle occupied state and a vacuum. So it just change, kind of form a two-dimensional representation between this empty state and one particle state. So this time reversal representation is pretty unusual because it mixes fermion parity even and odd state, something like supersymmetry.
I mean, you put one particle state, but it's not particle. It is a zero-dimensional example.
Just a fork space. Here, I mean just a fork space. Yeah, the local fork space, not the many-body vacuum. Yeah. Because in quantum field theory, we needed to define this local fork space, right? So the whole Hilbert space is a tensor product of fork space.
You cannot exchange the vacuum and take to the particle if you have more than one space, if you have space dimensions, right?
But in condensed matter, we just like we have a Hubbard model, we can define this fork space. So this is like kind of the, yeah, maybe it's not precise to call it the particle in the high energy sense, but it's some like you can, I don't know how to say it, it's just a basis. It's a fork basis, yeah. So the fork basis have different fermion parity. So in condensed matter, we call it a particle state, and the other called the empty state. But yeah, it's different terminology. I want to
maybe ask in a different way. Mm-hmm. The theorem in high energy is just a representation theory of SU2 plus SU2 of the local mm-hmm. You're saying there's something wrong with the theorem?
No. I'm not saying something wrong. I just saying this stirring neutrino, this invisible neutrino, might carry some different CPT symmetry. So here I'm just talking about this.
But then it's violating the theorem.
Sorry?
Then it's violating the theorem. The theorem says that representations of particles in SO3,1 are very well defined and they obey this singular in blue.
Yeah, it's extension, it's not a violet, I can show you later. So it's something called a projective representation. Yeah.
So if I'm thinking of the condensed matter setting, this would be the Ising chain mm-hmm. with just the interaction.
Yeah, if you do some like do some like a so-called Jordan Wigner transformation in 1D. It's just Ising chain.
Right. So you could start with three tangents then. But my question is, mm-hmm. these two modes, these mm-hmm. are the two ground states. Of
right.
The
right.
Start with these
right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The two modes on the end. But here, because I impose time reversal symmetry, I need two copies of that Magellan chain. Just like each chain, you carry a spin index. Yeah. I will show you later. So here, yeah, I needed to clarify.
Okay.
It's a
so
fork
space.
So I
should be thinking about the end of your chain, and actually now you have the
right. I can show you later. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The next slide. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So to understand this symmetry fractionalization, I just started from this very simple bosonic spin chain. We call it some spin one chain, And this is a very famous example in condensed matter that actually spin one half particle or spin one half representation can emerge on its ends. So this is called a Houdin chain. So basically, it's just a spin one Heisenberg model. But if this U is very large, it can have a phase transition. So the phase transition shows that this U equal to zero phase and U equal to infinite phase, actually, they are different. And actually, a couple of years ago, we realized that this symmetry protection actually is important. So for example, we need to impose the time reversal symmetry to protect this Houdin phase. If we remove all the symmetry in the system, actually, it's just a trivial. There's a crossover, no phase transition at all. And a simple picture to understand this phase can be attributed to some very early work, like 30 years ago. So people just add an additional term, si dot sg squared term, and then make the ground state of this model can be exactly solvable. And the ground state is pretty simple. You cook up some like spin one half degree, two spin one half degree, then you form the representation 0 plus 1 on each single side. And then you just make a pair, kind of dimer singlet. You make a state just a product of this dimer, so there's no correlation at all. Then on each side, you make a projection, project out this spin zero sector, you get a spin one particle. And then people show this is the exact ground state of this Hamiltonian. And from this construction, you see on its boundary, we have the, on the boundary, it has spin one half, right? So this is a concrete example that this spin one half particle can emerge from this spin integer system. Okay, so the key observation is that edge state from project representations of the symmetry group. So here, I first introduced this mathematical terminology of project representation because this spin one half particle, they form the project representation of time reversal. And the spin one particle just a linear representation of time reversal. Okay, so so this is kind of picture actually very general, and we can prove it can be generalized to any kind of 1D system. And we can call this kind of class of phase symmetry protected topological order. And actually, we have a kind of cross screening picture to understand this phase. The first step, assume this is a gap system, have certain correlation lengths, let's say it's 4. And then we just glue in some sites, cross-screen sites, and do it again. And finally, you can show it end up with some decoupled dimer states. But the key point is that this fixed point state, this one site split into two. And each site only carries spin representation one half. So that's why on this end, we can detect this spin one half kind of zero modes. Okay, so mathematically, it's a very well-defined so-called project representation. You can, any group, you can ask how many such kind of phase we have. You just compute this H2, GU1, and you know how many different project representation we have. And this cohomology classification can be extended into any dimension, and that's a very recent progress. And we can construct explicitly TQFT in discrete space-time. And actually, such kind of model, although we started with a lattice, but in space-time, you can imagine it can be formulated as a TQFT. It's actually independent of what kind of lattice structure we choose. And interestingly, if you think about the phase transition between these phase, like in this spin one half AKLT chain, you can think about if you tune this U, you could go through a transition to a trivial phase. And at the transition point, you can think about this spin one half kind of degree of freedom kind of deconfined. It can propagate into the bulk and then make this transition happen. Okay, so now let me show you such kind of very general concept also applied to Fermat system as well, but in a slightly complicated way. So the Fermat model, as Guifri mentioned, we need to cook up this two copy of so-called Kitaev's Majorna chain. And the Hamiltonian is pretty simple. So the Hamiltonian just what I draw here. So basically, on every side, I have four Majorna. Because on every side, I have a fork space made by C up dagger, C down dagger, and C up dagger, C down dagger, and this zero. The empty state. So it's a four-dimensional Hilbert space. So the four-dimensional Hilbert space you can decompose into four Majorna formula, and this interaction just this intersects Majorna coupling. So I wrote it here. Okay.
What's sigma, right?
Sigma just a spin up and down. Yeah, I draw it here.
So mm-hmm. I am trying to read. Is there a sigma to match in the Hamiltonian? If you wrote the Hamiltonian, it's I sigma.
Yeah, sigma just when sigma equal to 1, it's just plus, and sigma equal to minus 1, just minus.
So sigma is like values plus or minus.
Yeah. It's just a convention. So you can also remove this. But anyway, I use the convention. I have an additional minus sign. So now you can see that it's kind of some dimer, as I show you, for the speed model. But the argument is very similar. If this bulk on-site state carry a linear representation of time reversal, then this boundary is possible to carry the so-called project representation. So I can show you why we need to introduce project representation. Suppose the time reversal just transform this complex C operator C up to minus C down and C down to C up. And it's just this usual definition of time reversal. And it induces this transformation on gamma as well. Then you think about this Majorana fermion, this gamma up, gamma down on the edge, just transform in a normal way. But it turns out it does not work. So here, why it's not work? Because if we have a T squared equal to minus one crime doublets, then on this pair, we also have a T squared equal to minus one crime doublets. Then the whole site, you can show the representation become T squared equal to one. So it's not a correct time reversal symmetry, because here we specify the time reversal symmetry on the site should be realized as T squared equal to minus one. So the meaning of T squared equal to minus one means in the Fermi parity odd sector, it's a T squared equal to minus one, and the Fermi parity even sector, it's a T squared equal to plus one.
So I'm trying to follow. So how do you define the action of time reversal on a single side of the chain?
That's the definition.
Yeah.
That's the definition.
How do you define? What's the definition?
Where so in the free-form Fermi system, people call this on the single side time reversal realized as T squared equal to minus one, but because it's a Fock space, I will show you in the next slide.
My question is, how does time reversal act on one side? You just say T squared equal to one, fine, but.
So acting on C operator just like this. So C up to minus C down and C down to C up.
That's the definition.
Yeah, that's the definition. So you can show T squared equal to minus one for Fermi parity odd sector and a plus one to Fermi parity even sector. If you act on the singlet, because it's a Fock space.
Okay.
So we have C up diagonal, C down diagonal as a Fock space. It's just a T squared equal to plus one.
So you might draw the conclusion that T squared equals minus one doesn't exist, that there is no representation.
T squared equal to minus one, my conclusion is that if we want to realize this edge representation that present this bulk representation as T squared equal to minus one, then the Cramer doublets definition on the edge is incorrect. So I show you how I need to define some new time reversal symmetry. Yeah. So the key point is that, just as Griffin mentioned, so the whole Hilbert space on this single site is a Fock space. So we have four states. So it's a C up diagonal zero. We have an upper electron, down electron. We have no electron and a pair of electron, right? So for this space, actually the time reversal symmetry is an extension. We call it like extension over this Fermi parity symmetry group, IPF, which is a Z2 group. So now we look at the whole group. What's the whole group action on this Fock space? It's an order of four, T quadratic equal to plus one, cyclic anti-unitary group. So that's a T quadratic equal to one group. Then we can show just by using computer this second cohomology, you can show it has a non-trivial representation, which is T quadratic equal to minus one.
Sorry. So T squared acting on one side is minus one. Is that correct?
If Fermi parity is odd, we have a PF. So kind of PF, T squared equal to PF. So that's the extension.
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
You probably use this answer, but I didn't understand.
Yeah.
So
you can just look at the action on the Fock space.
Right.
So you change the C up diagonal state to minus C down and C down to C up. So this sector formed the Cramer doublets with T squared equal to one. It's T squared equal to minus one. But if you just look at this zero vacuum, the T just action trivial. So it's just a T squared equal to one. And this pair of singlet also T squared equal to one. So the conclusion is that this time reversal has an extension over this Fermi parity group, I and PF. So actually,
T
squared equal to PF, so that's the extension. That's why we get this order of four anti-unitary group. Yeah.
So what does it mean that to have is extended over Fermi parity symmetry group I, PF?
Because I, PF is an unbroken Z2 symmetry.
I just want to understand what that expression means.
That's just the group elements, two group elements. I is identity, PF is the non-trivial Z2 action. We can show there is a project representation. And you can realize this project representation on this kind of Majorana doublets. We just involve two Majorana, and you can explicitly write on this operator. So 1 plus gamma up, gamma down, and you can write it in a very nice way. And in quantum information, it's called a pi over 4 phase gate. And you can show it satisfies these properties of T quadratic equal to minus 1. Then we have a consistent theory. If on the edge, each edge, we have a T quadratic equal to minus 1 representation, in the bulk, just a T quadratic equal to 1. So that's the correct time reversal symmetry group we want to define in the very beginning.
What is K? You said T.
That's a complex conjugate. That's a very standard definition, T equal to UK. Yeah. Yeah. OK,
So T4 equal to minus 1 is one option, but you also have T4 equal to 1.
If you define T4 equal to 1, it's in the bulk, you can show actually it's not the T4 equal to 1, it's T squared equal to 1. Yeah. Yeah. So on the edge, the projective representation, you can do the mathematical calculation. There's only one inequivalent projective representation.
You're saying this is the only one?
Yeah, yeah. The classification is Z2. So you, on the boundary, you can only have T quadratic equal to minus 1 representation.
T4
yeah, equal to minus 1.
So what would go wrong if you have T4 equal to 1?
T4 equal to 1, just adiabatically connected to the original definition with Cramer doublets. Yeah, you can show there's a local basis transformation. You can just transform it to a complete trivial.
But would that lead to a contradiction? I mean, you're saying that there are two options when you look at how the group is acting.
Mm-hmm.
At the boundary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're choosing one option.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Option. Yeah, so the other option mathematically you can show it's just connected to a trivial. Just means that there's
fine,
no zero mode.
Okay.
Yeah, you can just redefine the basis to eliminate that.
Okay.
So now we see that there are interesting happens. So we can call it something like Majorana ghost live on the edge because, when you apply time reversal, it changes the particle to whole. So it's if you really interpret this particle, it's some particle in the condensed matter system, it kind of change a vacuum to one particle state. And we can also explicitly work out this representation because it's a projective representation, so it must be two-dimensional. There's a theorem, there's no one-dimensional projective representation. So you can show that this T action on the vacuum must go to one. So we can just choose some convention for the phase of the vacuum zero state, a fork vacuum. And then I get a 1. And then I act a 1. And then I can just use this operator relation for the time reversal action on the C operator. And I can show go to plus minus I. So this I is important and to make sure this representation take the T force equal to minus 1. And the interesting property that from condensed matter point of view, we can argue that it actually represents a quarter spin. So the reason why we call it a quarter spin because on each end, it's a pair of Majorana spin on. So it's a SO2 spin, it's not a SU2 spin. So you can define this spin operator as a SO2 spin. And actually it's just equal to this fermion parity on each side. And in the complex fermion basis, you can define this SY. Basically it's a spin Y polarization, right? And you can express that as a fermion parity plus the Fermi parity on the right. It's a sum over. So you, from this expression, you can show when all the Fermi parity, they are even, then the total spin here is minus 1/2. So effectively, you can show this S actually is quarter because it's a summation of the Fermi parity on the left hand and around the right hand. So in condensed matter, we call it a fractionalization. When the Fermi parity is odd, which means there's both occupation on both sides, then the total spin is just plus half. So effectively, the occupied state has a plus quarter spin on each end. OK, so now we can show why such kind of strange behavior happens. Actually, it's not strange at all if we look at the representation in the whole space, which is made by the left-hand zero mode and the right-hand zero mode. So the whole space is a four-dimensional representation. And if you work out this representation, you can show actually this Fermion parity even state, we call the vacuum, carry this Cramer doublets representation with T squared equal to minus 1. And actually this one particle state, because it's a SO2 spin, so actually it carries the representation T squared equal to 1. Then because this vacuum state, I mean the Fox space vacuum, a single site. carry this non-trivial representation, then we can see something interesting happen because you know, this ghost, it's like a white ghost. You just change the background to white, it vanish, and you only see this black. So that's the thing they play. And actually there's, no strange things happen, just become this vacuum transforming in a non-trivial way. Okay, now I briefly discuss this outline in high dimension. Then I try to apply this to quantum field theory, but I just look at their representation theory. So in high dimension, we can actually find these so-called majority zero modes in this topological superconductor as well. And recently we are working on some work that we can construct explicitly topological quantum field theory in discrete space-time to represent such kind of non-trivial topological superconductor with zero modes. And a similar generalization also exists in 3D, but it's much harder and it's still working in progress. And what happens if we assume that neutrons are Lorentz spin now formed by four Majorana zero modes? If we assume they are just formed by four Majorana zero modes, they can carry this fractionalized time reversal symmetry, and something interesting might happen. Okay, so before going into this quantum field theory discussion, I want to show you some very simple model in 1D. You can see there's a chance that this quarter spin can deconfine.
Yeah. So since I said at this point, maybe let me try to ask it again.
Mm-hmm.
In four-dimensional SO3,1 theories, there is a complete classification of what kind of states you can have in terms of the space-time transformation.
Right, right.
That gives you full properties of the CPT.
Right. But in an interacting Fermion system, there's additional Fermion parity Z2 symmetry. If you consider that's additional symmetry.
The neutrinos that you said are very interacting. They're very far away from each other.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about
by the free advantage.
I'm talking about the Fock space. So when you define this Fock space, there's unbroken Fermion parity Z2 symmetry. It's unbroken because any local interaction always changes Fermion parity by even. So there's no way to break this symmetry if we assume this theory is a local theory, local quantum field theory.
Yeah, but
this is the key of the problem.
Yeah. Well, but it's not going to explain. It's going to assume that you can write neutrinos in that such a way. But
can we? Yeah, sure. I'd like to understand. No, I would like to understand your question. And
I'm just saying, when I talk about neutrino, I allow to use this additional Fermion parity conservation symmetry. It's additional Z2 symmetry. Because we define the Fock space, we should allow to add this additional symmetry, right?
Do you have any reason to believe that you know something about fermions that was not known by the people who studied CPT before?
I think I searched this literature, and in quantum field theory, there's no discussion about this T quartic equal minus one symmetry. So, because it's some recent result from this kinesthetic community. So yeah, if you know any reference, maybe you can tell me.
But are you saying that from the point of view of QFT, these fermions would come from an unlocal theory or something like that?
No, it's a local theory, but just a local theory with this Fock space. You know, in TQFT, usually we talk about the Hilbert space, just a local tensor product. So we call talk about the bosonic TQFT. But actually, there's an extension. If we think about local Hilbert space, it's just the Fock space. Then this TQFT have a Z2 graded extension. And last year, we have a paper, so this so-called super cohomology about that. I will mention it later. So there's an extension of this TQFT. Like this cohomology group, there's a so-called super cohomology group, which is a group extension over the standard cohomology group. Yeah. It's also a group.
But to answer the question about what's wrong with the standard classification.
Yeah, in the standard classification, I think people usually talk about this symmetry in this kind of semi-classical language. Think about the local Hilbert space, it's a direct product instead of a Fock space. So here, I'm just talking about this Fock space is have this additional Fermion parity Z2 symmetry. Then this time reversal symmetry, actually we needed to write down as T squared equal to PF. If we ask if there are interesting representation theory for T squared equal to PF, there is. If we're just talking about T squared equal to 1, then the non-trivial project representation is just T squared equal to -1.
You're saying the Hilbert space doesn't break into tensor product
local parts. Local Fock space, yeah.
Right, because you have a Fock space, so the parity is going
to be So I can show you at a critical point, actually, this Fock space can be split into two pieces, so they can be spatially separated. That's so called a fractionalization.
Can you give me an example where you have a more structured theory of Lorentz?
Here it's a 1 plus 1D example. Yeah.
Does it case B?
I will show you. Actually, this is very interesting because if you think about this Fock space, local Fock space formed by the project representation of this T squared equal to PF symmetry, then on each local site, local Fock space only evolve two states. It's an O2 spin, not a SU2 spin. But this SU2 spin pretty interesting because in this theory, you can solve it exactly, and you can show the dispersion have two branch. So in kinesthetics, it's not a surprise. People call this valid degeneracies. So this SU2 spin just the kind of it's a emergent kind of rotation between this two valid degeneracy. So I think in graphing it's similar. If we start from spinless fermion, we don't need to assign this local Fock space has a 1/2 spin. They can just spinless, but because we have AB sublattice, then when you solve the dispersion relation, you always have two-fold degeneracy. So this two-fold degeneracy, you can interpret as a global SU2 spin.
No, I mean, give an example where the rotation group acts in an interesting way over your Majorana models.
The rotation group, I think the action just.
A neutrino happens to be in a spin 1/2 representation of the Lorentz group.
It is, but I thought his Majorana, I mean, your Majorana indices have nothing to do with Lorentz. Is that true?
No. I will show you in the quantum field theory later.
It's just to do with the degeneracy of the vacuum. I think it's. I think it has.
Neutrinos happen to be.
They happen to be in spin half, but I think that's nothing
and
to
mostly.
Do with. Is your okay? Same question. Are the Majorana index of your spinners?
You mean this L and the R?
Do they transform under the Lorentz group?
You mean transform like a SU2 spin?
Yeah,
for example.
I think this left and right indices, they are not necessary to transform like a SU2 spin because you see they just can be separated.
Sure.
Yeah, at a cutoff scale, you can think about it. Then if we solve this dispersion, if we think about this quasi-particle, they can transform like a SU2.
Right.
If they're not asking you to transform under some SU2. Whenever you do your model, you do again, how are you going to stick Lorentz indices?
Yeah. I will show you later. I will generalize this argument into quantum field theory. But this is just a very simple 1 plus 1D example.
But I should think of these as internal indices.
Right.
Nothing to do with space time and transfer.
Exactly.
Right.
So what happens in the chain problem? Two chains.
Right.
His spins are some internal degree of.
Yeah, that's all.
Related.
So it has nothing to do with the Lorentz group.
Yeah, so it's not making any comparison.
Then this whole discussion about this has not been done in filtering. People do this, discrete symmetry, internal discrete symmetry
Correct.
All the time.
Correct.
No, there's no problem of finding, Z4 groups. But your claim is much stronger. You're saying that you found that the CPT group has a new representation that hasn't been studied. But for you to be able to claim that, you need to show that your Majorana is really a space-time Majorana, not an internal Majorana.
Here I'm talking about this massless limit. So this SU2 spin just transform like an internal degree of freedom.
The question is the T, symmetry T. It's acting in a certain way on this space that you've got.
Right.
But how is it acting on x0, the time coordinate?
It's changing T to minus T. So here I'm just talking about this single particle action. So in quantum field theory, but this T to time minus T can be realized just a complex conjugate, because if you apply complex conjugate on the operator, you get this T to minus T. So it's not a scale.
You're saying this is just a starting point, but you'll have the field theory version.
Yeah. I have a field theory version. I can show you how they transform. I can write on this operator explicitly in the quantum field theory.
So this is maybe need to know more.
Yeah, just 1D, just to show you that even this local degree of freedom, they just kind of O2 spin, then in the long wavelength, this SU2 spin can emerge. So in kinesthetic matter, it's there are many examples. So here we have some interesting perspective that because this is kind of just a critical point. But if we cook up two different TKFT and drive them to this critical point, then this lattice does not necessary to be some fixed lattice. It's just can have this very generic critical theory, and this might be some conjecture Lorentz symmetry might emerge at a certain critical point. But of course, I don't want to claim this because in quantum field theory, it's still very hard. Okay, so now let me show you, we cannot only realize this T quartic equal minus one symmetry for Majorana particle, but actually we can also realize this P quartic equal minus one. So how we realize it, you may imagine it's very similar. We, for a pair of this Majorana spin, because now we're talking about a four Majorana spin. We can map in this up to minus upper prime, or upper prime to up. So the transformation just like this. And this, again, is a pi over four gates. And you can show it, if you just think about this pair, it's P quartic equal minus one symmetry.
Sorry. So the prime is on the other side of the line.
Right. You can imagine I impose the Z2 Fermion, Z2 parity symmetry. Yeah, just a Z2 on-site parity. So here I'm talking about a single particle. I don't consider this spatial action. So if we, in any kinetic matter, if we don't impose time reversal, and then we impose this parity symmetry, you can also realize this representation.
Yeah, but now you have modes gamma and gamma prime.
Yeah, on both ends.
On both ends. So you're
changing
the ends.
Yeah.
That's what the parity is doing, apart from.
Okay.
So the fact you call it parity at this point has nothing to do with space.
Right.
So why do you call it parity?
I think it's terminology in condensed matter. We just
you understand. Mm-hmm. In fact, some terminology is using condensed matter, and mm-hmm. name is used for neutrinos. It does not mm-hmm. imply that they are the same thing.
Here, I'm talking about the Fock space. In neutrino case, I will show you the quantum field theory transformation. Okay, so the up and down spin, they just transform in the kind of expected way because it does not change the spin. So here, particle, because I don't know, because in condensed matter, people do call electron as a particle. So maybe I should call it electron, some different name. I just means, it's a local fork space expanded by this C up dike, C down dike. And this left and right mode, they transform in this opposite way. So it gave you some notion. It's something like this particle and the antiparticle. So now, actually, more interesting, we can define some non-trivial charge conjugation. So I call it the C bar, because in the standard quantum field theory, this charge conjugation for the neutrino is actually trivial. So the non-trivial action, actually, I can write down in the pair of up and down prime. Again, it's a pi over four gates, and it transform this Majorana modes in the following way. And you see, it transform in this spin basis, just like C up, some upper spin particle to the down dagger. So it's like a particle hole transformation we used in condensed matter theory. And this left and right also exchange under this action. So this is a closed algebra I can define out of four Majorana zero modes. So finally, I can define this so-called C bar PT algebra for this four Majorana modes. So it's a closed algebra. And you can also ask how many projective representation we can have. And the number is interesting, it's three. And here I can also show it's commutative with this speed rotation. So in the massless limit, there's no problem to implement into this quantum field theory. Okay. So now I just show you this three generation. In my description, it's pretty simple, just because this CPT algebra have three different in-equivalent project representation.
Oh, sorry, can I ask you to go back? Mm-hmm. So here, what you've defined, you had a four-dimensional vector space.
Yeah, four-dimensional space. You have four Majorana modes.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you've defined three operators. One is C bar, the other is
acting on this four-dimensional Hilbert space.
And you also have a spin operator, and you realize that there is some logic
between. Yeah, spin operator commute with them. Yeah, right. You can show it. They commute.
So you have this set of.
Yeah, we have this set of all.
You said something about projective representations.
Mm-hmm. Because from this algebra, you can construct a projective representation. So T quartic equal to minus one forms the projective representation of this whole algebra.
So this is an algebra? I thought these were operators acting on
It's algebra. It's a closed algebra because it defines this commutating relation.
Oh,
or
okay.
The commutating relation.
So by projective representation now means it means that you split this operator.
Yeah. Split in two. You can define it in some fractionalized way.
Right.
Yeah. So the conclusion is that there are only three ways to define this fractionalized operator. And then it's pretty interesting that means that in the previous 1 plus 1D example, I can show you this. I can show you in the previous 1 plus 1D example, when I impose this T quotic equal to minus 1 representation, this local Fock space can be split into two, right? But here, actually, it's similar. If you look at this so-called D fermion, so I just reorganize four Majorana fermion into different complex fermion bases. And you can show on the CTP, they transform different. And the other is called the F fermion, also transform different. But the key step is that this D on this TP symmetry transform like TP quotic equal to minus 1 projective representation and a TC quotic equal to minus 1 projective representation. So in this 1D model, you can play the same game and you can show that at the critical point, this quarter spin, they can spatially separate it.
I'm sorry, at the critical point,
At the critical point, this Fock space can split into two. Each carry this projective representation.
The critical point of what? I did not understand.
Oh, the previous one-dimensional Majorana chain. I show you at the critical. Yeah, I can show you the model. Yeah, just at the very beginning.
Right, the Hallein model.
This model. This model, I'm talking about the critical because in the gapped phase, this hopping is not equal strength, so they kind of just confine. So this four Majorana always form a single site by four Majorana, but in the critical, because this strength is kind of equal, so you can effectively think it's deconfined because each SO2 spin-on can form a local Fock space, but a carry projective representation on the CP.
So you're saying at the critical point you have four degenerate ground state? This mode will become zero mode, still zero modes. So at the critical point,
at the critical, it's gapless. This is the dispersion. It's gapless because the zero mode can propagate into the bulk.
Okay.
So everything is just gapless. But effectively, you can think this quarter spin deconfined. Yeah. So it's just like in the Hallein chain and the critical, this one half spin can deconfine. But here, just make another square root. Actually, in representation theory, actually, there are three different ways to do this. So
it looks like four. Why do you say three?
Only three, because this out of four Majorana modes, there are only three inequivalent way.
Three inequivalent way
to form pairs, right?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, you can make 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 3, 2, 4.
Oh, let me better understand. So do you have this T, P, and C as matrices acting, the transformations acting on these four modes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can write down the matrices expression.
And then that's how make them one-dimensional subspaces?
You can diagonalize, and the action, I think the representation at they always contain a two-dimensional representation.
Sorry, and that percent, were there these four guys in the unique representation of P, T, and C, which are the composing, or you're doing something else?
I decompose what? Sorry.
You have a four-dimensional representation.
Mm-hmm.
This have these four Majorana modes.
Yeah, I have a four-dimensional representation.
And now you have the composing.
Now I'm asking what kind of projective representation I can have.
Sorry, you.
Yeah, it's just like this.
Are these representations containing the representation you're already talking about?
I think what it means is you want to break your representation into product of two pieces.
Yeah, into.
How do you break a four-dimensional representation in three pieces that are two-dimensional?
No.
There are three different ways.
And there are three ways of doing it.
Yes. Yeah. If you compute this so-called cohomology classes, there are three inequivalent.
So you have three different ways of decomposing the same representation into two irreducible?
Into products of two
two-dimensional representation.
Sum of products, sorry, sum of
products.
Tensor product. Tensor product of two.
Oh.
So each is two-dimensional representation. But there are three inequivalent ways to decompose.
But that's not the decomposition.
Each operator, say T, will become T acting on one place times T acting on the other.
I think you're just saying this is not what we usually call decomposition. The composition of a tensor is a tensor
Whenever you have a representation, I decompose, decomposing it into sub-representations means writing this as sum, not as product.
No. But what he wants to do is, he has an action of a group, and now he wants to regard this action of the group as coming from the tensor product of two different actions.
I understand now. This is not the decomposition.
And this product is of projective representation.
Projective. It's not usual.
And the claim is that this decomposition can happen in three different.
Yeah, but you get the product of two copies of the same projective representation. And also, why are the sums there? I don't understand.
You mean?
If you're talking about the product of representation.
Which sum? You mean where?
I mean, I don't understand.
Project representation is a kind of equivalent class, right? So,
The starting point was these four gammas, like gamma up, gamma down, mm-hmm. gamma prime up.
Yeah,
gamma prime
just
up.
The four operator acting in this
four
dimensional space.
Representation, so this C, T, and D, is this a correct statement?
They just a linear operator, it's not a representation, it's an operator. Gamma is an operator. It's a linear operator in the four dimensional space.
Yeah.
It's not a representation.
You know, when you have to it with T, P, or C,
it's like operator. Yeah.
Derivative linear representation on the operators.
Right. Then you can ask him how to construct this projective representation. Then there's a concrete way. If you form this complex formula, you can explicitly construct this.
So I see that you're taking linear combinations. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. what I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So that looks like a sub representation, the four dimensional representation.
Right.
So how can you find three different two-dimensional representations?
It's not a three different representation. It's a three different class of projective representation. So that's a different. It's not a representation. It's a projective. They kind of form the.
Or if you prefer, was the original projective or not? Was the original representation projective or not?
Projective. It's up to sign. It's not.
Two-dimensional representation. Was it projective or was it?
The four-dimensional representation is linear. The two-dimensional representation is
so how do you find projective representation inside a normal representation? I don't understand.
You take the full representation, you break it into the tensor product of two pieces.
He's not doing tensor product, he's doing sum.
No, but it's doing sum at the level of operators.
Yes, yeah. I'm asking, do these P, C, and T act on these four operators linearly or not?
Linear.
Simple question.
Linear.
Yeah, it's linear.
Do they ask? Okay, so
linear on the operators. Okay, right.
So does it mean these four operators form a four-dimensional representation of P, T, and C?
Right.
Yes or not?
Right. Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So how can you now find inside this four-dimensional representation, which mm-hmm. is not projective, mm-hmm. a projective representation that is two-dimensional in three different ways? It's no sense.
But this T quadratic equal to minus one is a very concrete example because you can just solve the representation theory by this D operator. So this is a two-dimensional representation and it's a quadratic equal to minus one.
I don't understand anything. What does the action of T, P, and C on gamma?
I defined it in the previous slide. So the action on gamma. So I only need to define this action on gamma. So action in this linear way.
What is the action of T?
So T I defined in the very beginning, just
okay.
this yeah, up to minus down.
So both
this is
T, P, and C are acting on these four gammas.
Right.
In a projective way or
in a
non-projective?
In a linear way. Yeah.
So how would you ever manage to find a projective representation of those? And I don't understand. Am I missing something? I've grouped this acting on four guys.
I think there is an implicit change of language that is not being made explicit, where you first look at operators as acting on some vector space. Now, in this vector space, you can factorize the vector space as tensor product of two level systems.
But he's talking about the action of C, P, and T on the gammas. He keeps talking about the action mm-hmm. of operators. I don't understand.
Okay.
By definition, it's the operator on the gamma. But when you want to construct
so
this,
so what is it? Decomposing the gamma or decomposing the Fock space into this?
I decompose the Fock space.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's so why I define the C. So the C can be the decomposition operator to C and D. This complex formula they define the
but
Fock space.
But then why don't you give me the action of on Fock space from the representation? The representation is defined by the action on the operator.
This is a physical way to see it because this representation is a quartic equal to minus one representation as an operator.
Remind me, what is the dimension of the Fock space?
It's a four dimension.
The Fock space is four dimension.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you find three dimensional representation on the four dimensional Fock space?
No, it's not a final three, just means three in equivalent. Just if you're doing this.
Even better. How do you find three inequivalent representations of a group inside a four dimensional Fock space?
That might be a bit confused. Yeah.
Four dimensional representation in terms of three different tensor products of two dimensional representations. So you can get the representation by product of two project representations in three different ways.
Okay, then I ask again. Product of two-dimensional times itself. What's that? How do you do it?
Times itself as an equivalent project representation.
There are three representation.
Three.
Each has the property.
Three different project representations.
Right.
Yeah.
Each of which squares to the four.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Maybe I make confused here. Yeah. So now I can generalize this representation theory in the quantum field theory. In this example, I show you just if I make this Majorana spin now in this way, I use this up and down and the upper band, upper prime and the down prime to form this Majorana spin now, two component Majorana spin now. And I use this standard representation of this real Dirac matrix. And then I can show you the action. This CPT on this quantum field theory just in this three different way. Yeah. So if you compare to the action of a complex fermion we define in the usual way, you see here, this is a Dirac spin-on, so I have an additional star. But if you compare this action in this box and this box, you can look at they are pretty similar. So that's why this C, I call it C bar, is kind of some charge conjugation action as this Majorana. Because if you look at the transformation for the spinner, it's just the same as the Dirac spinner, but just without this star action. It's also exchange epsilon and psi, and we have additional epsilon symbol. So that's the four component action.
One question, to call something T or P, you have to show that it
I can show you it's a commute with this SU2 spin rotation operator.
Where the speed does not, I mean, T reverses all the Lorentz
coordinates? So T actually also have action on this coordinates and the P.
Yeah, but do you have the full Lorentz generators defined on these things? And that's P reverse sign of the operator.
Yeah, so as action on the field, so this is explicitly construction.
Yeah,
you use gamma 0, gamma 5.
You can have the correct computational relations with the Lorentz generators.
Yeah, to call something T in quantum theory, or P, you need to see that it has the correct computational relations with the Lorentz group generator. How do you know that this T is what we in particle physics mean T?
Here this definition is consistent with the particle physics.
No, but then your CPT will not be invariant. Then you take the product of CPT because you change C and you get P and T the same, CPT will not be invariant.
I don't see that P and T are the same. No, actually, T does not have complex quantization anymore.
They all look different.
Either you
so
keep the same
not
or you have
T is not unitary.
Sorry?
Either you're changing the definition, and then you have to show that you're still consistent with the Lorentz generator, or you don't change the definition, you only change the definition of C, and then you violate CPT.
Gamma 5 will commute with this Lorentz generator, right?
Mm-hmm.
So C is commute. And gamma zero and gamma zero, gamma
now
phi.
Your CPT, the operation of C, P, and T will not be invariant. And on the invariance of CPT is a consequence of Lorentz invariance.
So in the complex fermion, this on the P is also changed like a gamma zero. So gamma zero is changed on the boost. Why it should be invariant with the boost generated? Gamma zero is a standard definition for the.
So you keep the standard definition for T. We keep the
standard. No, the most
it
doesn't
work.
They're all different by minus signs.
Mm.
And complex conjugation.
I mean, have you written down Lorentz generators which are compatible, which have the correct properties?
If you think about this rotation, they all commute.
Have you read Lorentz generators?
No, gamma mu.
Yeah, but this boost is gamma zero, gamma I. It's of course it's not commute with this P and T, but it's commute with gamma phi.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're doing boost, you can change the momentum, right? You can change K to minus K if you do doing boost. I mean, this is like a time reversal or parity definition. This is consistent with the standard quantum field theory definition.
Like there is no conjugation with forms.
Yeah, the T transformation is generically, it has to be anti-unitary.
Yeah, it is anti-unitary. If you define a kind of in the operator space, so here it's an action on the field. If we define this operator space, it's a product of the this action on the single side and this complex conjugate, so it's anti-unitary.
Sorry, can you repeat what you just said?
In the previous slides, I defined this CPT symmetry action on the single Majorna modes. Then here, you're just acting on this quantum field, which means it's a product of action on each single site. But after you define this product action, you add an additional complex conjugate. So make it an anti-linear operator in the Hilbert space. But I think this time reversal definition is consistent with the standard definition of time reversal for Majorna fields. It's just like act like gamma zero, right? So I just searched some literature in quantum fields. Yeah, maybe we can discuss the detail later.
Uh-huh. You have two boxes, the red one and the blue one.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
do they mean?
So this red one just means the standard CPT definition for complex Dirac fermion.
And the blue one?
Blue one is the definition in my CPT symmetry for Majorna spin.
Okay. So
yeah.
And you're saying that they only pair in C?
They only different by some like minus sign and some like a some stock conjugation. So I mean,
in C, but in P and in T, they also look different. But
they
different objects.
They just different. Also, just by some minus sign. I think they.
But I see some complex conjugation also.
Yeah. But this is real. So the complex conjugation is trivial.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this sense, it's this action is pretty close. You can think about it. You have well defined CPT symmetry for the complex fermion. You just push it to the real limit. And up to some sign, you just go back to this one. You can just think about it. Start from Dirac fermion. You just take this real gamma matrix, so it should be consistent.
Okay, and then the question is whether this is compatible with
the Lorentz generators, all the Lorentz generators. Like to say call something T, it has to satisfy T commutator H, T commutator P. They have to satisfy.
Just make sure. So you're saying these P and T are just the standard textbook definitions of P and T on a
Majorna? The P and T, I think it has a little bit of twist. So in the standard definition, they are commute. So in my definition, they are anti-commute. So that's
not the usual P and T in the textbook.
Actually,
so P and T anti-commute.
In my definition, they are anti-commute because gamma zero.
That
gamma
makes a lot of books work in a funny way, I think.
But it is anti-commute. I mean, in the complex fermion, you have some degree of freedom. So the interesting thing is that you have some additional sign. So without this additional sign, they just commute. But in my definition, they just anti-commute.
But then it's not the standard P and P. They're not the same operator as
W. No, it's just not compatible with the Lorentz algebra. P.
But it is a symmetry of this Lagrangian. But also, this symmetry requires you change x to minus x, if you just write on this.
If I add to the Lorentz generator M 01 with P and then T, or with T and then P, I'm supposed to get the same answer, right? So how do P and T anticommute?
For Majorana fields, you can have a minus sign. You change your sign to minus sign.
So, but it means that there is a new operator, which is the anticommutator of P and T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this P needed to
the inverse, which is minus one on the.
Yeah, I can write on this Lagrangian. So this is standard Majorana Lagrangian. So if we define this P in this above way, gamma 0, gamma 5, so you define this field transformation side to gamma 0, gamma 5 side.
I understand how it happens. Uh-huh. I'm just saying this P and T must also act on Lorentz.
Yeah,
generators. Okay.
Forget about the representations in this space of minor operators. Let's talk about P and T as operators.
Mm-hmm.
As operators, they also have to have some commutation relation with the Lorentz generator.
I'm just talking about the, it is a
I
symmetry.
Know what you're talking about, but then that's what we're asking.
I mean, I can make a new definition of this P because this P is a symmetry of this Lagrangian, and it changes x to minus.
Yeah, 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 but we need to know how it acts over the Lorentz generators. What is the commutator of Lorentz generator for fan translations with mm-hmm. this operator T? What's the commutator of T with the boost generator?
Mm-hmm.
We would like to know this. Because then is when we know that what you're calling T is what we call time regressive symmetry. Because that implies a structure of commutators with the Lorentz generator.
No, but if we define this way, you must change x to minus x.
Yes.
Yeah, you must change x. If you change t to minus t, it's inconsistent.
The point, you cannot call it t, okay? Unless it commutes with t.
Anyway, it's a Z2 action. It's okay. Yeah, by your definition, I don't call it P. But here
it's
some. But it's I can call it P bar because it also changes x to minus x, and it is a symmetry. It's a Z2 action. It's a Z2 symmetry.
P and T cannot anticommute because P. If I take Lorentz generator M01 and I act with P and then with T, OT and then with P.
It's invariant.
It commutes
with PT.
Yeah.
But it's an invariant of this Hamiltonian Lagrangian. So I can call it a symmetry. Yeah. So, I mean, in condensed matter, we just, if the Hamiltonian is unchanged on the symmetry, I can call it a symmetry. But also need to change x
to minus. We call it Lagrangian is invariant. We call it a symmetry.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we agree.
Uh-huh.
But the question is whether this symmetry is the actual T symmetry of the CPT.
The point is that this is a difference.
We are not discussing
nothing to do
with
symmetry.
We're discussing whether this symmetry is what. This
yeah, but it also changes coordinates x to minus x y. This is the vector transformation. I mean, yeah. Next time I call it p bar maybe to avoid the confusion. Yeah. So c I already changed to c bar to avoid the confusion. But anyway, this Lagrangian have this very funny. This time reversal and additional two z two symmetry in the massless limit, right? So they basically, you can think about it has three Z2 symmetry. So it's a funny property of this massless Lagrangian. So now the idea is that this SO2 spin, you see, we discussed it before, they themselves can just form a projective representation of this CTP algebra. Then we can talk about this possible origin of this neutrino mass. But a much better model should be described in the context of TQFT in discrete space-time. But here, I just use some field theory argument, and there's no well-defined ultraviolet cutoff, but I hope the symmetry is correct. And so the idea is that if I want to get a mass, I just couple with a scalar field, which changes sign under this C bar action. And then I can make this Lagrangian invariant. And when this scalar field condenses, I can generate a mass term. So that's a very simple idea from this symmetry argument. And if I assume the Majorana, they interact through this phi, which generates this Yukawa interaction, have the same strength, then I can generate this mass mixing matrix. So I can show you how to do that. So yeah, so here just a list to show you there are three different ways to construct this Majorana spinner, which carry this different three projective representations of this two interesting finite Z2 symmetry. One of them called a TD, other maybe something different anyway. So I can have three different ways to define this spinner, and you can show the three different way, this first and the second way, they transform differently under this so-called CPT action, C bar P bar T action. And this spinner transform the same as this Psi F, but pretty interesting. There's no continuum Lorentz transformation. You can map this to this one because they are connected by some transformation with determinant equal to minus one. So it's not a continuum Lorentz transformation which is connected to this identity. So we can call these three different fields as kind of three different generations. So, but a much better regularity must evolve some model with a well-defined cutoff. But here, I just this have Pullman scheme and argue they are different. But if we assume this still captures the symmetry, let's see what kind of a result we can have. The result pretty interesting because so here I can write on this complicated coupling term, which is invariant on the, all this C bar P bar T symmetry I wrote down. And to diagonalize this mass term, I just use some trick. I define some field redefinition and make them in much better uniform way. And in this much better uniform way, I can express all these this Majorana fields in terms of this gamma, in terms of gamma. I compare this Yukawa coupling. So if I assume all these Yukawa coupling are the same for this three different generation, then I can make a comment that the three generation, this off-diagonal coupling just satisfy this, and the diagonal just like this. But there could be off-diagonal and the diagonal, there's no constraint for this sign. There could be an additional minus sign. But this sign is important from this condensed matter point of view. This sign is something like a flux. So if I have three minus signs, like a pi flux solution, and no minus signs, just a zero flux solution. And if with this kind of mass relation, because we can condense this phi field and have a mass relation, then we derive this very interesting mass mixing matrix. And if we diagonalize it, you find that you get this correct angle than measured from experiment. And the interesting thing is that you can see there's a hidden Z2 cross Z2 symmetry in this matrix. So this Z2 cross Z2 symmetry is something related to this CPT group, because the CPT group, if we assume only two of them are independent, then it's a very natural Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. But although in my case, they realize in some very funny way in this projective way. But we have two solutions, as I mentioned. I can use the convention g equal to minus g prime. And in this convention, we find something interesting. M1 almost equal to M2, and M3 is a little bit larger. So, but this is for the stirring neutrino. So if we look at this light neutrino, actually, you kind of 1 over M. So it's the inverted kind of version. But this is a consistent picture. But the other solution is inconsistent because this M3 in the middle. So we just drop this solution and keep this solution. Okay, so yeah, sorry for timing, so I almost finished. So this is something I can predict for this model, for this funny mass mixing matrix. So the prediction one is that if I assume this Dirac mass, which couple this three generation of light neutron and dark neutron in the same strength, then I can show this light neutrino measured in the experiment to have the precise this mass. So I have a very funny ratio square root of 5 over 3. And the second prediction is that if I add some flux, so this flux basically is something like this Barry phase. I assume this CP violation just caused by this flux. There's no additional amplitude fluctuation. So if you choose this phase to be pi over 24, it's I don't know where to come from, but it's amazingly, I get this ratio, delta M23 square over delta M12 square equal to 30. And meanwhile, I got to see the 1-3 angle equal to 7.3. So it's pretty interesting. And then there's a prediction, this CP violation angle, it's pi over 2. So in the next 3 to 5 years, people are able to measure that. So yeah, if it's pi over 2 would be very interesting. At least this mass mixing matrix seems kind of some interesting data because all consistent with the current measured data. Yeah. So I guess it might be topological Barry phase, but I don't know how to compute that now. So that's the conclusion. Yeah, I just define some interesting CPT symmetry, so maybe called a C bar P bar T symmetry. And I explain this origin of neutron mass as the condense of a scalar field, and then compute this CP angle. From first principle, it's something in the future, very interesting things, because this pi over 24 might be have some interesting meaning. And then currently, we are also working on this CKM matrix mixing, and within a similar framework, surprisingly, we can also produce this correct mass hierarchy and the correct CKM mixing angle. So that's very surprising. So this is very challenging. Maybe in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe there can be lattice realization for this 3D Majorana modes in a lab, in this nanowire lab. And also, I think this framework, especially in the context of a super cohomology and a super fiber bundle, which is a TKFT in discrete space time with super coordinates, might be give some new routes towards quantum gravity. Okay, thank you for your attention.
See the discussion about the P and T.
Right.
Is it something that you're carrying from the Majorana chain example?
Actually, you can see it's interesting. It's from this, it's interesting, almost defined by this algebra. So in this algebra, it can be either commute or anti-commute. So that's why I call it's an extension of this usual definition. You know, this P and T in my algebra, they can either be commute or anti-commute. So kind of it's an interesting, funny property of this Majorana scalar modes because it's a degenerate state of Fermi parity even state and odd state. And if you choose the even state, they just commute. You choose the odd state, they just anti-commute. So that's why in this Majorana sector, I can able to write on this anti-commute P and T symmetry. It is a symmetry for the Lagrangian, but also change the coordinates. Maybe, it's some different P bar symmetry. Yeah. But this algebra allow I have this solution. I can also commute because PF is just a gauge. For a many body system, you can fix PF equal to plus or minus. It's a choice, gauge choice.
Also, if you remember in the Majorana chain example,
yeah.
The parity is related to counting the number of Fermi.
Yeah, on both ends. On both ends. So there are two sectors. If you examine this algebra in the even sector, they commute. In the odd sector, they anti-commute. So you can.
How is it related to space? Because finally, parity.
So I just generalize this symmetry from single particle to this many body just by product this local action. So. Yeah, for example, this local action, it's something like exponential pi over 4, gamma up x, and gamma up x prime. So you just product this action on every space, and you have a p0, which is action on these coordinates. So the total action just something. Sorry, there's another action of this exponential minus pi over 4, gamma down prime x. So this is the spatial coordinates. And this is the explicit parity operator in this quantum field. So you can think about it's a fork space on each spatial point.
What
so
is
I can define
P0?
P0 just acting on the coordinates. You change x to minus x. Because you want to make it a symmetry, you also want to change x to minus x. It's just like a complex conjugate. You change t to minus t.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a non-particle physicist, this calculation you do, does it only rely on having this symmetry, or does it rely on identifying T and P with the real T and P?
I only rely on this symmetry, just this algebra.
So it's not important whether how it acts, how it relates with the Lorentz group, it's not important for
it. It is a symmetry of the Lagrangian. Assume I have this symmetry.
Okay.
Yeah, then I can do the calculation. I even don't need to define D, T, and P. Yeah, I can just define some different way of the symmetry.
So, there are many models that give you exactly that. For neutrino masses by having internal discrete symmetry, this is what it is. I think what you'll discover is that there are models in the literature, Z4, Z2 plus C2 of neutrino mass matrices.
Yeah, but this is exactly some interesting model which will show you that this symmetry actually has relation with the T and X.
Well, but we just established that they probably don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah,
You know, this in this algebra, this T and P, they can be so it's just a symmetrical extension. You know, this.
There's a theorem called the Polamandula theorem. Uh-huh. So you cannot find other generators. If you find other, like, operators which are.
Don't think it applies to discrete.
Yeah,
it doesn't apply to discrete symmetries.
No,
you can extend the Lorentz group by discrete symmetries.
No. I don't think Kolmogorov has anything to do with discrete symmetries. It's all to do with conserved quantities, so I don't think discrete symmetries don't give you conserved quantities. I don't think Kolmogorov is not relevant.
Can I you predict that lowest order is that theta 1 3 is 0. And then you said that somehow.
Yeah. I just add some flux. So I assume this CP violations are just a very fixed. So I assume there's no.
Just when you went through this, you went very fast through all this.
I added some flux.
Okay, I have a question
what
about
you
previous.
Go
ahead.
Just that this is an experimental conflict with observations.
Go ahead. Which one is in conflict?
Well, theta 1 3 is not zero. And if you take that discrete symmetry at face value, you get theta 1 3
in the neutrino sector?
Yeah.
This is the rock.
In the neutrino sector, theta 1 3 has not been established.
Yeah, this is not there. This is from my calculation by
his prediction. That's not a measure. That's his prediction.
This is the prediction after he added something. The zero sort of
prediction.
He added
numbers.
Zero.
But at the beginning, of course, I assume there's no CP violation. So it's kind of this CP violation part like a phenomenological model.
Wait,
so
CP violation, do you mean your CP? Are you changing this? Are you changing something in your.
Okay.
I can
just define as like a kind of time reversal violation. So time reversal is the same definition. Yeah, so this flux kind of is violating time reversal anyway. So you add some complex flux away from the zero pi, so it's violating time reversal.
So in your theory, this flux is essentially a free parameter that you tune to match.
If you tune to match this pi over 100, then you can match all the experimental observation.
But you tune it to a very nice value.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just intrinsically close. Yeah, because at the beginning, I just want to fit this region to be 30. And meanwhile, I get this value, but I also get this. So I don't know why. So this is just a purely
phenomenon. Which of these are measured numbers and which
The measured number in the very beginning, I think only this three angle and this mass splitting. So here everything is from my computations. There's no measurement.
There's no measurements here. You had some measurements on the previous.
This
was predictions.
Right? This is also computed from this matrix.
Okay, so is there anything measured yet?
This is the violation of experiment. Because theta 1 3 is not zero.
Yeah, but here I assume there's no.
He's getting zero there. So yes, we have
leading order.
Which numbers are measured?
Exactly.
All of them are measured.
All of them are measured.
The only one that's not measured is the CP violating.
Yeah, it's a delta. So from my side, it's pi over 3.
Yeah, so that's a prediction.
Yeah, that's a prediction. And also this absolute mass ratio, 3 over square root of 5. Yeah. There are only two predictions. All these measured. Yeah. But here, kind of like leading order, I don't have any CP violation phase. But in principle, I have the freedom to put the kind of phenomenological, but I don't have kind of explanation why I can have such kind of phase.
Can you help me understand how these mass methods came out from the symmetries? Maybe a couple of slides.
Just because there's a difference from simple symmetry in this mixing.
Yeah. I mean, but now big back
mass
that,
differences.
Make more fun.
So five in the neutrino.
So four?
They're all matched.
Four from one?
Yeah, so three.
Okay, just one. Yeah, I need to balance this.
You write on the environment according to.
So these psi f, psi c, and psi d are independent Majorana fermion fields.
Yeah. But they can all be expressed as gamma. So the gamma should be the same gamma. I just assume there are different organization of the gamma.
But what's that? There's no gamma here. Yeah, MC prime B is just
some redefinition. So I want to make this Lagrangian more nice, more symmetric. I can easily diagonalize.
So all of these 1 plus gamma 5 and all of that are set so that the symmetry.
Yeah, because the symmetry condition I need to add is this additional very weird 1 plus gamma 5 factor. But it's a unitary because gamma 5 squared to minus 1.
And then here there are 4 numbers G. GCD,
So I just put some parameters. So
they're not fixed by symmetry.
Yeah, so in the next slides, I just compare this recovering American spins.
Okay, so at the moment, there were 4 independent numbers not fixed by the symmetry.
It's not fixed by the CPT.
Okay,
so you need some additional, the same coupling.
Yeah, I would like to understand what happens next.
Uh-huh. So next thing you need to assume they have the same coupling.
What does it mean?
Means
who has the same coupling?
Means this Psi F and Psi B, Psi C, they're just different organizations of Majorana modes. And the Majorana modes, in fact, through this recover interaction in the same strings.
Question, what is phi?
Sorry?
What is the scalar field?
The scalar field I introduced at the very beginning to give a mass.
It's a singlet.
It's a singlet. Yeah.
So the Lagrangian is the sum of those, right? It's the sum of these 6
terms? Yeah.
Okay, so what do you want to obtain on the right-hand side by tuning the G, C?
Make sure this is recoupling, they have the same value, and this is really...
So which symmetry, which... So you say you want to...
Want to make sure that recover impressions in this term, they are the same. So basically, you just compare the coefficients.
But why? I mean, the terms look the same at first intercept gamma, so I'm really confused.
Without just
happen
to be
exact
the same, but so
that
you can this.
Now I really don't follow anymore. So why do you use the same gammas to describe? I thought that psi D, psi F, and psi C are now independent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why are you expressing them in terms of the same gammas?
Because as I explained at the beginning, all these gamma I assume they're the same.
How many fields do you have? There are 6 fields. There are 6 fields, or there are 4. How many fields do you have?
So you can think in this way. So that's the better thing in this field theory. I don't have a cutoff theory. So at cutoff theory, I only have this Majorana field. But at low energy, you can assume they have 3 independent fields, but they just different way to organize this Majorana field.
I don't think this is an actual field theory. What you're saying is that you're using the transformation properties of your gammas to infer the low energy transformation properties of your field.
Right, that's
gammas are not fields.
No.
Right, there are some things that you hope that.
So that's a conjecture because I don't have a cutoff theory.
So why in the next, what motivates you in the next slide to?
I
don't understand why.
Because I assume this different organization of this Majorana modes, they have the same recover impression. So I need to tune this component to be the same.
But then you're just imposing by hand, as we said already, an internal discrete symmetry. And that's it.
And then he's imposing more, right? Because the discrete symmetry would not imply the thing in the red box.
No, it does. Because then I think that's the symmetry, right? That those three states are the same.
I think each
definition
side was.
He just used the definition of the.
Right, like GCD needs to be equal to the square root G.
No. In the previous slide, those. Can you show the previous slide?
Previous slide.
I thought that each term in the parentheses was independent.
Independent.
So those are 4 couplings that are
right.
Not fixed by the symmetry, but it's fixed by requiring that they look the same in terms of the gammas.
But the psi's are not independent.
No, they're not independent, they're not three to three, okay.
So the psi's
are not independent.
Lorentz symmetry, are they really like Fermi?
Because there are three different this kind of pieces, so I can argue.
How can they are not independent?
They are just like this and this, they transform different values. So why is it?
But then the Lorentz group, are they real fermions from the Lorentz point of view? Are they really?
There's no continuous Lorentz group that you can connect this to this. You cannot find a continuous Lorentz.
So they, so So the gammas did not have Lorentz symmetry, right?
Yeah, gamma don't have Lorentz symmetry. That's the point. And it is.
And these three modes suddenly get the same Lorentz group transformations to become all spinners.
Right. That's the assumption.
Magically, or by some dynamics.
I just.
With the same speed of light.
So the CPD symmetry action is, as a definition, is acting on this gamma. So once I define.
I don't care about CPD. I'm talking about Lorentz. Okay, Lorentz is kind of important.
For the Lorentz symmetry, it's imposed by hand. It's not emerging this approach. I just write on this Lorentz Zeeman action in terms of.
Why is the speed of light the same?
But that's in quantum field theory. It's an assumption they have the same.
No, it's not an assumption. It's experimental observation.
So you said you have both the neural CPT and
I have this CPT plus this Lorentz symmetry. So
can your CPT be written as product of the neural CPT with some internal CPT?
I don't think so because what you mean, the usual CPP for the Majorana fields, if you can write on the definition, we can compare whether there's overlap or they're independent. So I cannot write on this, the so-called usual CPP. This is an N3 discrete zero symmetry. There's no additional discrete zero symmetry.
My question is, do you run these three families of three Dutch Majorana fermions, and then read them in terms of only a lesser number of gamma separator.
Right.
Is this compatible with the fact that independently each of these three fermions transforms properly under the Lorentz group? Because you're using. Yeah, I'm not sure that. I don't think that's the case.
But if we write on the.
Like, can you derive me transformations for these gamma operators that guarantee that all these three fermions are actually fermions from the point of view of the Lorentz group?
I think that's what he's saying. That's the assumption he's making.
So that's the transformation of this spin. So this spin has some difference.
I mean, if you really wanted to have the question you had in the red box, wouldn't it be easier for you to have just